Bishus Marina Rabshlita. We say the Shir Le'iloi Nishmas Maras Gittel Bas Ze'ev, the mother of Warren Greenwood, and her yacht site will be in another week or two. And we wish Warren Nechaim Aruchim, thank you for sponsoring, a long life to you and all the family.
Amen.
Welcome back, Howard Shmulian, and Mazel Tov on the Chasana of your son in the USA. Great to see you back. The young couple should be happy and have a binyan adiyad and a bayis nem on Bisrael. A very nice surprise this morning is to see Harry Gittler is the name. Yeah, you should all know the name, because if you want a diamond ring, go to Harry Gittler. He's the best service. My daughter-in-law is so proud to wear his jewellery. So a high recommendation for Harry, and give him some business. Just before we come to the main topic of our shiur today, which is part two of Onos Devorim, what we discussed last month, I had a lot of interesting feedback from various participants last month, and all of them were feedback except one comment I had, which was surprisingly negative. And this person said to me, you mentioned Donald Trump giving insults out, and he mentioned brain dead Bernie Sanders, who is the Democrat senator. And I mentioned the word that he's an anti-Semite, and he said to me, how can you call him an anti-Semite? You just given a shiur about Onos Devorim, which is not to insult people, and here you insulted another Jew. How could you do this? I must admit I was astonished at this feedback. There are two ways I would like to address it without getting involved in politics. Number one, the din of Onos Devorim, lo sonu es amiso, relates to not amiso, doesn't only mean a fellow Jew, says the Nemuk HaYosef, it means somebody else who is a frum Jew, a Yerei Shamayim. Obviously you have to show love to everybody, obviously you have to be kind to everybody, but the idea of not insulting somebody else does relate to somebody who's in the same club as we are, who is Shomer Shabbos and keeps kashrus and the Taras Mishpocha. Bernie Sanders proclaims, he says he's a proud Jew, but he's married to a Christian woman, he supports BDS, he tries to stop armed sales to Israel, and he accuses Israel of genocide. And maybe without, as I said, getting involved in politics, and the topic of anti-Semitism is really perhaps for another shiur. David kindly raised the subject just before. But it's always masqueraded in disguise. You know, they say we're not against Jews as such, but then they allege some evil which they claim that Jews embody. In ancient Rome, it was that the Jews undermined the empire. The early Christians, they killed Yeshu. In the Middle Ages, they drink the blood of Christian babies. In the Middle Ages, they poisoned wells and they spread plagues. And then in the 19th century, the anti-Semitism takes a different form that they exploit with money lending. They control the finances, the economies, the media, global conspiracies. And then came Yirach Shamam, the Nazis, that the Jews are not the Aryan race, they're not pure people, that they exploit others, they control the human race and civilization. And then later on in the 20th century, the Jews are controlling United States policy. And then we come into the 21st century, where the Jews are accused of running an apartheid state. And then we have, more recently, from October the 7th, the Jews are committing genocide. Now, just to remind these brainwashed people, if Hamas had not done what they did on October the 7th of torturing, murdering, raping, mutilating, the number of casualties would be zero. So anyone who's still insistent that what I said was not true about Bernie Sanders being anti-Semitic, unfortunately some of the biggest anti-Semites are Jews, anyone who still thinks that, there is an exhibition going on in Shoreditch about the Nova Festival. It's open till the 5th of July, and it was mentioned by Lord Panic in the House of Lords this last week. So that's my contribution. I could rattle on about it much more, but that is something which is important to put on record. Onos Devorim, back to our subject. We spoke last month about trading insults. It's min ha-Torah also to insult anybody, and as we just said, amiso. But even without words, even if it's just a facial expression, even if it's just by way of photographs, Certainly you can say, well, I had no intention to humiliate the guy or to insult the guy, and then you might not be chayav if there was sincerely no intention. But if there was real negligence in doing so, then it's onos devarim. And even if it's not something direct, or even if it's not a direct insult, but it's something which hurts somebody else, Sefer Chinuch says, to cause a pain to another Jew is onos devarim. So if you make an appointment to see somebody, and you just fail to make a reminder about it in your phone or your alarm clock or whatever, and you don't turn up to that appointment, and that fellow has made the journey and is waiting for you, that is also onos devarim, because you have caused tsar, pain, to another yid. So the obvious question you'll say to me is, well, if somebody does insult me, can I at least answer back? And on that, the Nemuka Yosef says, yes, you are entitled to answer back. But it doesn't mean you have to answer back with insults. You can just say something very politely. I myself was the subject of a road rage quite recently, where I was driving to Grodz in Golders Green, and I was turning right, and there was a space there for me to park the car. And I thought, oh, great. So I just smoothly drove into it, turned off the engine, and as I was about to get out, I could see a car reversing towards me, as if, I didn't see there was a double parked car further up, but there was a lady in there who was hoping to reverse into my space, and I was there first. And she got out and started yelling Chayva Kayom at me. I mean, real insults. I won't repeat them, even though this was an apparently religious looking Jewish lady with an Israeli accent, but that doesn't mean anything. But she was full of insults to me, and I thought to myself, well, what do I do now? And I said, sorry, madam, I didn't see you. I just saw a space and I parked in it. But don't worry, I'll be back in a few minutes. But that seemed to anger her more. And she was trying to insist that I get out of there, and which I thought was a bit unbecoming. So I thought, there's no point arguing. There's no point answering back, because whatever I say, what are you doing? I think in road rage experiences, the best thing is not to answer back at all, and best to keep quiet. But la halacha, one is allowed to defend one's position, because if you don't, it might be seen as an admission of guilt. So that is the halacha there, that you are allowed to answer back. But if you don't answer back, and if you are being silent and you swallow it, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives enormous praise to you. And there's one incident I remember in North Hendon Synagogue, and this is back in the early 1960s, when we used to daven in a very small Beis HaMedrash in the school. And my father, Zichrono Livracha, was shouted at by somebody, and my father was completely silent about it. This was when Mr. Peter Tidbury, who was the caretaker of the Hasmonean school, was away playing golf a lot. So he asked my father if before Shabbos he was meant to lock up the gates, and that my father was happy to oblige. We were next door neighbours, our garden's next to the school. So Peter Tidbury asked my father, if when he's not there, if he could lock the gates, and there was a chain around the gate or something. And apparently this man was very upset that he couldn't drive his car into the school playground to Shabbos. I don't think the practice is done anymore, is it? And he was yelling after Mariv on Motzei Shabbos at my father so much, and my father was completely silent. I mean, he didn't do anything wrong. And I said afterwards, Daddy, why didn't you answer him back? Why didn't you explain to him that this is what Peter was meant to do and you were helping him out? He said, no. He said, when somebody shouts at you and insults at you, imagine as though it's a gezerah min hashamayim, that you are meant to accept whatever's being said and you don't answer back. And this is something which is brought in a sefer I've got called Kutsei Sashem Eshu Gvoroso, that when you swallow your pride and you do not answer back, there is in fact a prayer which is written in the Taras HaKodesh that when you are insulted, you could say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Boli HaBazionos HaTovosi, that all the insults I received were for my good, in order that it could be a kapara for any of my sins before Hashem. And sorry. Yeah. We spoke last month about Hanelov, Harav Yossi Heller, who signed off all his teshuvas in his sefer already say in Shalosh Shuvos of that Hane'eh love, because his family, his mother, had been severely humiliated in an unjustifiable way. And that somebody who swallows their pride, and the biggest example of that is Rachel Imenu. And I could even refer to this in this Sefer, Kaseis Hashem Shubhavasa, where Moshe Rabbeinu is not answered always by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Avraham Yitzchak plead before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they mention the Akedah, and Hashem doesn't answer. Yaakov Hiskes Tzar Gidol Bonim Nisurim Rabim Yaakov Avinu Lo Nene Moshe Hiskes Shairo Nemot, he faithful shepherd Rots Lifnei Yisrael Kesus Bamidbar, he defended the people of Israel, no Nene Ulmi Ke Nene La Rochel Shiskira Es Havara Al Mido Sehel, because Rochel, she swallowed her pride, she helped her sister by her not being put to shame in front of Yaakov Avinu. She gave her husband, who he had worked for 7 years, the man whom she loved, and she was prepared to give him up just so that her sister would not be embarrassed. And for that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers prayers. A very interesting idea. Now, moving on, then if you're causing tzar to somebody, it doesn't necessarily mean a personal insult. And one very important halacha is gezel sheinah. Stopping somebody from sleeping, either waking up somebody or preventing them from going to sleep. Now you say, what's this got to do with Onos Devorim? You're not really saying anything, you're not insulting anybody, but you are causing tzar to an individual, you're causing harm to an individual, and although the word used in it is gezel sheino, which the Chofetz Chaim uses as a term in his Sefer Avos Chesed, nevertheless, Rav Chaim Kanievsky says it's not really theft. The idea of stopping somebody from sleeping, well, if you're stealing from them their sleep, you can't pay them back. Normally with theft, you can pay back. He writes, this is an issa of lo sona es eshtami, so of upsetting somebody else, of causing tzar to somebody else, either by waking them up unnecessarily. Obviously, they ask you to wake up for davening, then you wake them up. Sure. But if there was no justification for doing so, you have to tiptoe quietly, make sure you don't wake up your wife when you go to bed. Preventing from falling asleep is the same idea. If you're blaring music, now that's not applicable in all places. I mean, let's say you have a wedding hall and they're playing loud music, then you can't accuse the guests of violating those only Yisrael Shamisa. Well, mind you, I must admit that the music at the weddings does get a bit loud, and I'm very anti these loud weddings, and it's very difficult to know how to handle it. At my own son's wedding 2 years ago, the musician was chosen by the mechatonim, so I didn't have a say. I wanted somebody who keeps it down. So I went up to the musician and I said, look, you keep your volume down. And I waved in front of him an envelope with a large amount of cash. You keep the volume down and you will get this at the end of the evening. And you know what? He still was very loud. I don't know what it is in the mentality of these people, but nevertheless, you do have instances where there's difficulty, like summer camps and people stay up late and someone wants to go to sleep, or they have these sleepovers and a school Shabbaton, and there has to be some discretion and kindness shown to others. But this whole idea of not allowing somebody else to sleep, it also comes under v'hafta l'recha kamocha, of course. But the Sheva HaLevi says you're harming the welfare of other people, and you're causing injury to others. And examples are given by the Pischei Choshen of how severe it is to make other people lose their sleep. When you have a communal building and there are flats sharing with each other, I mean, in Switzerland, you're not allowed to use your washing machine or have a bath after 10 p.m. It's not like that in England, but they have these rules. If you're building a sukkah late at night, saying, well, it's a mitzvah and I have to do it and I've got no time, you are waking up other people. This is an issur gomor of lo sona ish es amiso. Even if you're learning Torah loudly, well, I have to learn, otherwise I'll fall asleep if I'm not loud. You are not allowed to learn loudly when you are waking up somebody else. Noisy vehicles, revving your engine late at night. Or if you are on a plane and you are davening, and as a result of your davening, you're causing others to lose their sleep, or not necessarily on a plane, on a train as well, Sefer Halicha Shlomo says it's Isur Gomor. You should not make a minion on the plane if it's disturbing other people from sleeping. Just daven b'chizus in your seat.
Currently, I use fireworks. You know, we heard on Lag BaOmer, we had heard loud fireworks. Yeah. It could only be Lag BaOmer, not other, any other festival.
1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, something like that.
So, you can't wake up somebody else. Now, there's the famous story of Doma ben Nassino, who would not wake up his father. A non-Jewish fellow would not wake up his father. The rabbis wanted some precious stones to use for the choshev, for the Kohen's breastplate. And he said, I'm sorry, my father's sleeping, I can't wake him up. And as a result, he got a wonderful reward. Gemara in Kiddushin, Lamed Aleph, and he got a Parah Adumah. The question is really, though, I mean, if somebody is in the jewellery business, and he finds out afterwards that somebody came to do big business, and we're talking about 600,000 gold coins, which is what was involved, that the father would normally be very angry. Why didn't you wake me up? I wanted to do this business. So is it necessarily correct that Doma Nassino would not wake up his father? Anyone who's in for a big business deal would be angry with his son for not waking him up. Well, that's an interesting question of halacha. But if a father says, have you lost your mind? Of course I would have. You should use your common sense. But the rabbis wanted to show up that here was a case of somebody who was so conscientious about kibbutz of a non-Jewish fellow, so how much more so we should be conscientious about kibbutz of aim amongst the Jewish faith. But in actual fact, halachically, there's a lot to be said that Doma ben Nassino did not do the right thing. An interesting debate. So, moving on from Gezel Shino, and if you jump a queue, you might not be saying a single word. And my wife was in an Israeli supermarket where a fellow with a big black hat and a long beard pushed his way through to the front of the queue, mumbling some excuse about being late for giving a shear. It's completely osur. He even pushed my wife, and my wife said to him, is that the way you treat all women? She shouted very loudly at him. And just because, you know, if you're queuing up to meet teachers in a school, just because you might be one of the teachers, it's not an excuse. If you're wishing Mazel Tov to a Baal Simcha, and you have a special connection with the Baal Simcha, because maybe you're teaching his son in the school, that is not an excuse to jump the queue when people are queuing up to say Mazel Tov. Another way of Issur Anos Devarim is when you give yourself honor, but as a result of that, you are disgracing somebody else. For example, if you say about this fella, oh, he does chesed every single Shabbos, he's a wonderful guy, but I do this chesed every single day. Yeah. You are elevating yourself, that is onas devarim. I mean, his Shimon Esra lasts for 5 minutes, but mine lasts for 8 minutes. You know, people who boast like that are committing a crime of onas devarim. We briefly mentioned last month about if you go into a shop and ask how much something costs, but you have no intention of buying it. Now, there's a lot of things written about this. You know, what if you get a wedding gift and you're curious to know how much it costs? You may not go into a shop and ask how much it was just because you want to know what it cost, how much somebody spent on you. You're not interested in buying it. That's an issur d'oraisa. All right, if you, nowadays you can go online and sit on eBay or Amazon and see what it costs. That's not then causing tsar to anybody. Fine. It might not even apply if the salesman in the shop is a salary salesman, it's not his business. But the problem is, the poskim say that when you ask somebody a price, you're raising his hopes that he might do business with you. And then when you walk away, then he thinks, oh, my price is too much. Then he'll call you back and reduce the price. I'll give you a discount. 5%, 10%. That you'll make him think he should lower the price, and that is forbidden because of what you're doing. And then there's the other thing, is that sometimes people, they go into a shop and they want to try something on, and they have no intention whatsoever of buying it. They just want to take a picture of themselves to post on social media. That is osur. Why? Because not only are you giving false hopes to the shop seller, but you're also committing wear and tear on the item. So that is forbidden. If you want to go from one shop to another to compare their prices with the intention that you might possibly come back to this shop, okay, that's fine, because you're intending to buy. That's not onos devarim. What if you advertise something with no intention to sell that product? It's also osur.
if you have no intention of selling, and you put, you advertise on the market something, and this is the Sefer Chasidim says in Shin Yod Aleph, you are not allowed to do it. You're causing tzar to somebody else. And this causes actually a problem for me, because in my work in planning permissions, sometimes the council say, well, we don't want this use to change from one use to another use, unless you put it on the market and nobody was interested, and after a while then we'll agree. But put it on the market for 6 months, for 12 months. So I would say to a client, look, put it on the market, advertise it, 6 months, 12 months, log the phone calls, and then at the end of that year, you can put it, and then you can apply for planning permission. You say to the council, look, I advertised it, nobody was interested. Now, on the face value, to advertise with no intention whatsoever to sell is osur. What you can do is maybe pitch it at a higher price, or say you're selling only for a particular purpose and nobody will be interested in that purpose. And then you're not guilty of avonos devorim. But just stump to advertise with no intention to sell is not right.
Even if it's a Gentile market.
I beg your pardon?
Even if the majority are Gentiles in the market.
Wow, that's an interesting point. I did say lo sonu isha samiso, but there's always the possibility that one of your customers will be a haimashiyid. And given that, you have to be aware.
Even in a non-Jewish country, the majority of people who read, assuming you don't just leave it in the Jewish press, you put it in the general press, are going to be non-Jewish.
Does Onos
Devarim
not apply to non-Jewish?
We just said it doesn't.
Onos Devarim does not apply, but... there's the possibility that you are misleading people. It's Ganeivas Das, that's another issue. It might come under that heading. It has to be made clear in the advertisement that you're only prepared to accept a certain price, or it's only going to be for a particular use. But just to advertise with no intention whatsoever to sell is likely to be Onos Devarim. It's true, if there's nobody of our persuasion who is going to be in that audience, then maybe you're okay, but there is always that possibility that you are going to be in breach. So, more close to home, yes?
When Hendon and Shul were replacing thereof, the appointed Rabbi Bixenspan, who came out of Canada.
Yes, Rabbi Bitzelstein was appointed to the Hendon Hadass.
Yeah. Once that appointment had been made, they discovered he had visa problems to get in, and therefore the British authorities said you must advertise the position in case an Englishman wants the job.
Right, so the British authorities said you have to advertise his post, even though they had granted him the position, but he couldn't get visas. So the British authorities wanted proof that they gave opportunities to local people to have that job.
And they advertised the job.
So they advertised the job.
I saw the job out there. I thought, well, that's...
Oh, did you apply?
They appointed someone.
You got the job.
Ah, interesting one. I've got no answer to that. Pardon?
Which I was saying, well, it's Dina Dvachos and Dina. They have to advertise
it. They were honest. They had no choice but to advertise. So you could say, and it was a Shem Shemaim, all these other excuses.
On the lines of what Gershon said, I remember when I was young, I'm sure, advertise for a chazan. And we never had a chazan. And there never would be a chazan. So I said to my late father, I said, why are they advertising for a chazan? He said, no, somebody abroad will apply for the job, and the British authorities will give him a visa, and he'll come in as chazan.
But usually, if you tell the authorities that he is our chosen candidate because he's got the qualities, they don't accept that. They insisted on advertising the post.
It's priority delivery to people first.
All right. Okay, on another topic we briefly mentioned last month, and that is when you're asking a shayla to a rov. Obviously, you feel like I've got the right to ask any shayla I want to the rov. That's what he's paid for, to answer my questions. But if you know for sure that the rov is not really involved in that subject, I mean, let's say you've been learning Mishnayos Taharos and you got really involved in certain halachas relating to Tahara, which are a bit obscure, then you should not be asking the rov such a question, because you're putting him on the spot and you're going to make him feel embarrassed that he's not familiar with the subject readily, And or for that matter, you go up to the Rav on Erev Pesach and you ask him a question about Huchas Sukkah. He's involved so much in Pesach matters, it's wrong to ask him a shaila about the way you're building your sukkah, which for some reason you have nothing else to do on Erev Pesach but to think about your sukkah. Now, if it's a complicated question about Choshen Mishpat, which is mandatory matters, then you can ask Dayan Khan about it because he's involved day to day with Choshen Mishpat. So he is an expert on Choshen Mishpat. But there are many other Rabbonim who are not experts on Choshen Mishpat. You shouldn't ask them out of the blue a surprise question, and that is called Onas Devarim. And in addition, there are some people, they think, oh, I'm going to be clever, I'm going to really research this subject and look up all the things which are on Osa Chochma, and I look at all the sources on this subject, I'll know what all the opinions say, and then I'll go and ask the Rav and see what he says. That's also Osor. Unless you go up to the Rav and say, look, I've researched the subject, these are the opinions that I have found, but for myself, in a practical level, I'm interested to get a psak to know how this halacha applies to me. That you can do. But if you just try and test the Rav, then that is osur.
It happened at Bakon told me. Somebody came to him with a very complicated question, and he gave him the answer on the spot.
Yes.
Phoned him up later in the evening, and you shouldn't think I gave you a flippant answer. It just so happened that somebody else answered me the same question earlier in the week, and I researched it. And the answer I gave you was following the research that I had to do.
Right.
But again, people would think, oh, the Rav doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, we have to accept that although we expect our Rabbonim to be walking encyclopedias, we have to know that sometimes they got their mind on certain things more than on other things. And Rabbonim can't be expected to know all the four chalakim of Shulchan Aruch Baal Peh, and there's also the fifth chalak of Shulchan Aruch, which is the Derech Eretz and so on. We have to understand that human beings, maybe if you write a letter or email to the Rav and say, look, this is the question which is bothering me, then that way you're giving the Rav an opportunity in his own time to check it out, to research the subject, and to come back to you when it's convenient. Usually a Rav will say, listen, I need to get back to you on this. I don't want to answer this straight away. And many Rabbonim will do that. But nevertheless, you are humiliating the Rav if you do that. And then there's another thing. If it's not a Rav, let's say you're invited to a meal, and the host says to you, tell me a Dvar Torah. Now, you might take this by surprise, and you're not ready to give a Dvar Torah. The host should not really say to his guests, tell me a Dvar Torah, on the spot. If when he invites you beforehand, when you join us on Shabbos, it would be nice if you could say a few words about the Seder, then you're giving the person a chance to prepare themselves. But if you are the host, and you just say point blank at somebody, and you think, oh, well, this guest is very learned, he'll have a Dvar Torah for me, then it's not fair on the guest to do that. Although I learnt a golden rule once from a rabbi called Rabbi Sidney Lepra, who told me, he said to me, wherever you go, you're going to be asked to say a Dvar Torah, and if you're not prepared, you can always give one Dvar Torah, which always works, which fits any occasion. But osu li mikdosh v'shochanti v'socham. There's always the question you can ask about, but also, it fits any occasion. A birth, a bris, a bar mitzvah, a bas mitzvah, a wedding, a nebuch, a funeral, a shiva. The osu li mikdosh, I make v'shochanti v'socham. Why in there and not Socho, it's in the plural and not the singular, and we relate it to that person you're talking about. The Dvar Torah is fine for all occasions. So you can always walk around in your pocket with this Dvar Torah about Osuni Mikdash. But it's if your host says, and I was in fact invited recently, and the host actually said to myself and another guest who was present, saying, I'm going to say a few words about the Seder. If anybody else would like to contribute, I'll be delighted, but nobody is under any obligation. But to say to somebody, give a Dvar Torah, it's not fair. It's Onas Devarim.
There is a phrase which is used extensively nowadays called Das Torah.
Das Torah.
Go ask Das Torah.
Yeah.
And people go to a Rabbonim who give them answers which are completely not wrong, because they're afraid that if they say, oh, I have to research it, people will think less of the Rav concern. Mm. And yet they come away with answers which are completely incorrect. And any Rav who is asked a question who doesn't understand should not be afraid to say, I will look into it for you. And if they don't, then they're wrong.
Yeah. Other examples. Children who like to boo others. Yeah, to give a surprise fright to somebody is Onas Devarim. Rambam writes in Sefer HaMitzvos, Yachisu Yav Hilunu, that somebody who just boos somebody else as giving him a fright is Onas Devarim. It's also Onas Devarim, believe it or not, if you have a wild dog which is frightening your neighbors because you're causing tsar, you're causing harm to somebody else. Then if you have to tell somebody some bad news, how do you tell that bad news could be turning out to be Onos Devorim? If you are insensitive, Sarai Menu died after the Akedah because the Sotan came up to her and said, you know, God told your husband Avram to take Yitzchok to be offered on the Mizbeach and to offer him up. And before the Sotan had the chance to say that Yitzchok had survived, she died from the fright of just being told that. You do get sometimes some insensitive schools which phone up the parents saying, we're phoning up about your son who's in class so-and-so. And you feel, oh God, what's happened to him? The first thing a school should say when they phone up the parents is say, all is okay. You do this. Right, I can see a few teachers around the table. The first thing you say to the parent is, listen, all is okay. And then you say what you wanted to say. And even if it's good news, when Yaakov Avinu was to be told that Yosef is still alive, they realized that they had to break the news very gently because the amazing impact which would have on him could give him a heart attack. So Serach Bas Osher was chosen to start singing a song and to talk about Yosef, the tzaddik, who is alive and well. And then Yaakov Avinu was saying, oh, I wish what you were saying would be true, blah, blah. And slowly it sunk into him that his son was really alive. We spoke briefly last time about pranks and April Fool tricks. Any prank which bothers somebody else, which might cause tsar to somebody else, is an aveira. And I do remember, as a child growing up in this very shul, although it was in the school, that there was always on Simchas Torah pranks being done. I can see somebody nodding who was here in the 1960s. But it must have been in the early 60s because we moved into this shul. We had 1963, the foundation stone setting. 1965, the shul was built. It must have been in 1960, 61. There were certain individuals who made it their job to make sure that there was a cup or bowl of water hanging on a window ledge above where the chazan stood. Yeah. And attached to this pot of water, there was a string. Yeah. And that as soon as the chazan would say, Mashiv Baruch Hu Da Goshem, they would pull the string and the chazan was soaked. Now, if the chazan was prepared to go along with this and didn't mind it, then fine, it's not Onos Devarim. But if it does bother the chazan, it's an Isor Gomor, it's Onos Devarim. Even though no words are said, no insult, it's a prank which causes tsar. There was an occasion I remember when the chazan was actually carried out from shul in the middle of the Chazavas HaShatz, which upset Rabbi Cooper very much. It's completely against the din, and I don't think the chazan was prepared to go along with that. Sorry, but these sorts of pranks are not what the spirit of Simchas Torah is all about. Nicknames, derogatory nicknames. Sometimes from school you get a nickname and it lives with you for the rest of your life. I still get people meeting me 50, 60 years later calling me by a nickname, but it doesn't bother me, this nickname, so it's okay with me. But some people, or even just to call somebody a name they don't want to be called by. You know, so I know of a young lady whose name is Natalie, but a certain relative of hers insisted on calling her by her Hebrew name, which was Esther Baylor. She was always Esther Baylor, Esther. And she didn't want to be called Esther Baylor. She wanted to be called Natalie. For goodness sake, call people by the name they want to be called by. Don't think that you're so righteous that you can call them by their Hebrew name. It's Onos Devarim. There is one struggling question I did have in doing this subject, and that is there are certain occasions in Shas where one Rav is insulting another Rav. Certain dialogues, which are certainly not politically correct. So we go in Gemara Sanhedrin Nun Tes, where Rabbi Zera asks a hypothetical question, and Rabbi Yabahu, because it's so hypothetical, Rabbi Yabahu calls Rabbi Zera a foolish bird. It's an insult. Then you've got another Gemara in Bava Metzia, Pei Dalad, Omad Aleph, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. Now Reish Lakish was a Baal Tshuva. He was formerly a highwayman, a bandit. And Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, they were in fact brothers-in-law, so they obviously had a good connection with each other, don't we all with our brothers-in-law? And they were arguing about a certain idea of weapons becoming Tomei and losing Tahara. And Rabbi Yochanan insulted Reish Lakish and said, well, a bandit should know his banditry, he should know these things. And Reish Lakish felt insulted. It's not nice. And we mentioned last time about reminding Baalei Tshuva about their past. One doesn't do it. Then there was another case in Pesachim and also in Megillah. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok called another scholar a black pot, whatever he meant by that. And Rabbi Yehuda Hanossi, speaking to Levi ben Sissi in Yevamos Daf Tes Omad Aleph, it's also Menachos Pe Aleph, he said, you've got no brains in your head. This was a discussion about a fellow suggesting that his mother might wish to do Yibum. You can't, a mother can't do Yibum because she had a child. If your mother wants to do a Yibum, then it's not possible. So he said, how ridiculous you're talking. You've got no brains in your head. Did he have to say it that way? That you've got no brains in your head?
Why does the Gemara report it unless it's trying to tell you a lesson?
Ah, thank you. Another example. Rabbi Dosa ben Hakinos refers to his own brother as a firstborn of the Soton for following Shammai, not for following Hillel. You've almost tessai. Now, that we do find though with Hillel and Shammai how they showed great respect to each other. Erevin Yud Gimel, and the Machlokas, a voice came down from Shammai, Eilu v'Eilu Divilokim Chaim v'Halocha Kabeis Hillel. And what is the reason why Halacha is Kabeis Hillel? Because Beis Hillel showed greater humility than Shammai, because Hillel always mentioned first Shammai's view. They gave it respect. They mentioned it first before they mentioned their own view. And then they gave their view. So the reason, one of the reasons why we follow Hillel is because they showed enormous respect to Shammai in quoting their view first. And with that humility, that's why they had a merit. But we're still back to our difficult question about how can these Gedolim Yisrael, these Amoraim, talk insults to each other? There are a number of answers given. The Chavos Yoyer tackles this subject. Rav Yoyer Chaim Bacharach, he lived in Frankfurt from 1639 to 1702, so he's a real classic. And he discusses these Gemaras about the insults being traded. He said, often the remark was from a teacher to a pupil to try and spur them to do correct behavior. That there are instances where a teacher may rebuke a pupil in a certain way if it will put them on the right path. Quoting Yerideo Simon Reish Mem Vov. Sometimes, although it sounded like an insult, he says, some of these comments were complimentary. Rav Shesha says as Rav, he must have been falling asleep when he said this. So that was intended as a compliment because he wouldn't have never normally said such a thing. And it's impossible for such a great Torah scholar to make such a mistaken statement. Or these Rabbonim were friends and they didn't mind it if they were teasing each other in that way. Chovetz Chaim writes on this in Be'emayim Chaim. He says they were not right trying to disparage personally, but so they wanted to undermine the ruling. They were worried about Pesak Din becoming known, which they were worried the halacha would not be kept properly. But there is a comment, Kumadum Eli She'en Lomach Bekud Kodo. He's got no brains in his head. And that's, as we said, Rabbi Yehuda Hanossi. Nevertheless, despite the comments of the Chavos Yoyer and the Chovetz Chaim, I think that there is another answer to this, which might be shocking. And that is, maybe in the heat of their arguments, because they got so carried away emotionally, that maybe they did make a mistake. Do we really have to whitewash every single Rav if he committed such an aveira of insulting another Rav? That maybe it was something which he had to do to Shuvah for. We once gave a bagel shear about infallibility. So there's more on that there. But Rav Chaim Shmulevich, who wrote the Sichas Musa. Pardon?
So why is it publicized?
Yeah, if it would be such a shameful thing, why does the Gemara spell it out? Listen to this answer from Rav Chaim Shmulevich, who was the Rosh Hashiva of Meir. In his Sichas Musa, Tovshin Mem Gimel, he writes about
Chana and Penina, who were co-wives. Chana and Penina. Penina had 10 children. Chana was crying, she had no children. And Penina was teasing Chana. She was giving her a difficult time. Gemara Baba Basra, Tes Zayin. And it upset Chana so much. So when Penina was challenged about it, she said, I wanted to provoke Chana into davening. My kavana was l'shem shemaim. I had good intentions in teasing her, because by doing so, she would daven, and by davening, she'll get children. Nevertheless, although Penina's motive was l'shem shemaim, she was still punished. Her 10 children died. So I think that is really the answer to the question. It's wrong. You don't do it. Your kavanas might be l'shem shemaim, but words have consequences. And therefore, that's not really the way to be. But it is said that in Bavel, this was their way of limud, where they wanted to undermine the ruling of somebody else, that they were so emotional about it that they might have given this insult. But you do not find such insults in the Gemara Yerushalmi. Interesting contrast between Bavli and Yerushalmi. So with that, coming out from Shavuos, as we've just done less than 12 hours ago, there's an interesting idea which was said by the Gera Rebbe, who asked, what is the Shabbos before Shavuos called? Because before Pesach, you've got a Shabbos called Shabbos HaGodol. You've got a name for a Shabbos before Sukkos, Shabbos Shuvah. If it's not the previous Shabbos, it's the one before. So he says, what is the name for the Shabbos before Shavuos? He said, we should call it Shabbos Derech Eretz. Because Derech Eretz, Kodma LaTorah. Shavuos, we celebrate the giving of the Torah. But before you receive the Torah, you have to have menschlichkeit. You have to have manners. You have to behave well to other people. Derech Eretz Kodma LaTorah. You have to be nice to other people. And if you are transgressing Onos Devorim, you are definitely on the wrong side of the fence when it comes to being nice to others and being a mensch. And therefore, even without the halachas of Onos Devorim, you need to be a mensch. And if I can end off with just one little story about a Chumash party which recently took place in the Terah Tamima primary school. And the boys were all queuing up for their prizes. 5-year-old boys. And they were queuing up for their prizes, celebrating that they now learn Chumash. And they were asking each boy, what do you want to be when you grow up? Now, the first boy said, when I grow up, I want to be a Rosh Yeshiva. The next boy said, when I grow up, I'm going to be Mashkiach in a Yeshiva. And the next boy said, I'm going to be a famous Rav. None of the boys, by the way, said, I want to be a solicitor or an accountant or a town planner. None of them answered that. There must be something wrong with the education system in Terah Tamima. They came to the last boy, and after all of the others said, I'm going to be a Rosh Hashiva, I'm going to be a Mashkiach, they came to the last boy. His name was Zobin. And they asked him, what do you want to be when you grow up? He said, I want to be a mensch. That is the answer. Thank you for listening to me so patiently.